Hi, I'm Abby. I'm a mom and a writer.
Hi, I'm Melanie. I'm a mom and a writer.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm a mom and a book coach.
Welcome to Mom Writes, where we aren't slick, we aren't fancy, but we are real. This podcast is all about our coaching journey, writing a book from start to finish. It's real life writing, done at the kitchen table or in our spare 15 minutes between work and school pickup. This is how we get it done. It's the dirty laundry behind writing with kids. If you're interested in more information about Author Accelerator and the same coaching program we use, visit Jenny's website at www.authoraccelerator.com. Today's episode is pulled from a conversation I had with writer and writing teacher and mom, Lori Tom. Lori is a friend I met through Jenny, and she is funny and insightful and so smart when it comes to teaching kids to write. Actually, not just kids, families, because that's her gig, teaching families to write together. So even if you don't have kids, you can take away so much from this conversation because a lot of it is about inhibitions. And frankly, we need to remember these strategies when, as adults, we approach our own writing. So I hope you enjoy today's episode of Mom Writes with Lori Tom. So today on Mom Writes, it is just me, Abby Matthews, flying solo with Lori Tom. So hi, Lori.
Hi, Abby. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really, really good.
So I feel like I always have to point this out when we talk to someone that I have met in real life, but Lori is a real life friend. Actually hugged Lori.
And when we hugged, it was just instant connection. We've known each other for minutes?
Yep. A hot minute, I believe you just said. I liked that definition.
A hot minute. Yep. It was like some enchanted evening. I met you across the crowded room, aka Jenny's house. Yeah. Jenny Nash's house.
But I love it. I love it because I feel like sometimes, you know, writing is so solitary and we meet so many people online that become our friends, but like you never actually get to see their face. And so it's just lovely that we've seen each other's faces.
Yes, it's fabulous.
And now I'm looking at you over Skype. So, so obviously, as we've just said, we've met through Jenny Nash, but we met because... you met Jenny Nash because you did Author Accelerator. Or did you meet her before? Did you go to her class?
I met her many years ago, actually, probably around 2005. I met her before Author Accelerator was created. And
BA.
Yeah, I took a class from her. I live in Palos Verdes, California. And I took a class from her called Women Who Write. And it was kind of like meeting you instantly. Oh my gosh, this is someone who is fabulous and I need to know. And I first absolutely loved her because every book she mentioned and I knew and loved. And I was like, oh, if we've read the same books, then
we have
she's
to
my
be
people.
BFFs. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the magic that she had then is the same, and it's just growing and growing with Author Accelerator. And then I did more classes with her. I did probably one of her first blueprint book, doing a blueprint plan for a book. And then I did Author Accelerator, and I had a writing coach, and it was phenomenal. It's a great experience.
Sorry, that's my dog nosing the microphone. Right there. I have two dogs on my lap right now. I don't know what they want. I made sure they had food and water and had gone pee before we started, but they're... Yeah.
It's attention. It's the same thing we want as writers.
I know. It's kind of like your children when they know you're having a really intense conversation with dad. Yeah. And that's when they have to tell you, like, I saw a squirrel today.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Awesome. Great. But anyway, well... One of the things that has sort of connected you and I, Lori, is our love of not just writing, but our love of families wanting to write together. So, you know, I really started this podcast and started working with Jenny just with the intent of myself wanting to learn how to write. But the sort of unforeseen consequences of all of this was now my daughter sees me writing.
Yeah.
And now my daughter wants to write. Well, one of my two daughters does. My youngest daughter, who's 5, doesn't even know how to read yet. So maybe that's step one. I don't know. I keep thinking, well, maybe she'll just get paper and draw, which would be a first step, right?
It absolutely is. And if you want to talk about that, I mean,
yeah, let's talk about it because
sure. You know, just to give people background, I'm a teacher. I'm a writing teacher. I taught middle school and then predominantly elementary school. And after I mostly taught fifth grade. And then after I had my daughter, I stopped teaching full time, but I was a writing consultant in schools in our district. And I started working with kindergartners. And so many of my friends were like, oh, you're going to be so bored because they're not writing really, they're pre-writers. They're not writing these in-depth pieces. And it couldn't have been further from the truth.
Yeah.
And honestly, the composing process of a kindergartner and even a preschooler is going to look dramatically different, but it's the same darn thing that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And those kids, if you get in a conversation with them, they can tell a story, and they'll start out with like a picture that might have a flower, and they might put an F above it to label it. And there's not meaning there, but they're just starting. And then they might do a picture of, I'm on a walk and my dog stepped on a flower. So now an element of story is there. And they're going to, you know, as they keep growing, as, you know, I was working with these kindergartners, you could see that progression. And there was story there. They were still drafting. They were still gathering ideas. They were still, oh, I need to change that flower to red instead of blue, you know. So it's the process is completely fascinating, no matter what age you are. And if we can just, as parents, talk to any kids about their writing, you know, you're going to have the same conversation. So,
you know, and so B is my older daughter. She's 7.
Yeah.
Belle is my youngest daughter. She's 5. And don't worry if you mix them up because grandma still mixes them up.
I only had one, so there's no confusion.
No confusion. Well, and I named mine both B names. So, you know, that I think tends to be confusing. But, so my youngest Belle is just not, I don't want to say she's not interested,
yeah,
but I don't think she's comfortable just yet. And so yeah. I feel like step one in getting her to want to write is just allowing her to become comfortable with the process in her own time. And so we've started this thing where actually, so my oldest daughter, Beatrix, like Beatrix Potter.
I was wondering why she just got the B and not like all the other letters like Belle has. So I'm really glad she's Beatrix.
No, it's B-E-A. Okay. Yes, but it's Beatrix, like Beatrix Potter, which is what happens, by the way. I mean, side note, because I was a teacher for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Isn't it really freaking hard to name your kid after you've taught like a million kids and there's some sort of association with every name you can think of?
You know, that's so funny. I never thought about that, but my daughter's name is Anna. I never had an Anna in like 15 years of teaching.
I never had a Beatrix.
That's so funny.
I had a Bella.
Oh, that's
but
good.
That was a family name. And I actually just like Belle. And so even though her name is Bella, we dropped the A, it's Belle. So I've never had a B and I've never had a Belle in class. And so that, like, to me, that was just important, even though my Bella was super sweet. She was a super sweetie. So that one was okay. But
have you ever done name stories? Okay. Name stories, that's like a whole amazing writing thing.
Okay, so lay it on me. I like the way this, I mean, we're shifting the conversation, but I love it. So name story, what is that?
Well, if you, first of all, one of the things that I do is I use a lot of mentor texts. And so Sandra Cisneros has a book called The House on Mango Street, which is a classic high school text, but I you know, I used it forever. But she has a piece called My Name, and it's stunningly beautiful. It's this really short little, they're kind of like memoir vignettes. Mm-hmm. And I use that across grade levels with kids as a writing piece. And then, you know, they write their own name stories. And there's a lot of Native American picture books, and the titles aren't coming to my mind right now, but I know I've used them, about the meaning of your name, you know. And so, you know, if you can just free write off that, there are stories behind every name. And if we weren't taping right now, I'd tell you mine. When we go off tape, I'll tell you mine.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, I was going to say, like, I know Abigail means father's joy. Yeah. And I can say that that was, the funny thing is my mom has always said that when my dad and I are together, it's like a private party and no one else is invited. And it totally teased my mom off because my dad and I don't even have to talk to each other. We just have to look at each other and we know what the other is thinking. And my mom just loses it. She's like, you two are talking about me in your heads again. You know?
I mean, there's your name story right there.
That's my name story.
That's your name story. Right. Right.
But, yeah. So and Belle wanting to write,
yes.
You know, Jenny had said really early on, and one of the really, I think like our very first episode, the mom guilt episode, she had said something about, one of the ways that you can sort of combat this idea of mom guilt is by essentially using your writing time as a way to model your passions for your children, which has really, I mean, I know it sounds really cheesy and corny to say, like, that was life-changing for me, but that was flipping life-changing for me. Just the idea of, I shouldn't be guilty for teaching my children how to follow their dreams. I mean, so I really started looking at it that way. And when I started looking at my writing time as a way to show them to do something that they love, B started picking up on that, and she wanted to write her own book. And so she did. She wrote, it was the Little Lulu Junior Kit. She wrote, Lily the Alligator Doesn't Know How to Swim, which, let me just say, that kid had a grasp on story. Like, I would not believe at that time first grader could do. I mean, she had a problem that her character tried to solve and couldn't solve and hit these roadblocks. And she had like the emotion behind how that felt to not have her problem just, you know, come together. And so she blew my mind. I mean, she, honest to God, blew my mind. And I wanted her to write more, but I didn't want to push her to do it. I was afraid if I pushed her, you know, mom's stamp of approval is often all it takes for your kid to be like, oh, I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, yeah. Well, I listened to that podcast. It was great, by the way.
Thank you.
And my daughter's experience right now models what you're talking about. So my daughter just turned 15, and I've, for her entire life, I've been a writing teacher. And in our community, I teach these family of writers classes. They're night classes where families come together and write. She wanted nothing to do with those classes. And I'm kind of one of the go-to writing tutors in the community. And of course, my daughter doesn't do a lot of writing in school because that's the way school is set up here a lot of times. And we live in a phenomenal school district. So I was kind of in this catch 22. It's like, oh my gosh, like I can't help my daughter because, you know, the daughter of a writing teacher does not want the writing teacher to help her. I mean, that's just a DNA thing. And so I just kind of had to let it go. And what's interesting is she completely identifies as a writer now. And, you know, she uses Wattpad, which you guys talked about on your podcast. And she is someone who constantly has a storyline running through her head. And so I think we just have to have faith in that. Now, I would take a wild leap, you know, and guess that you have read to her, all of your daughters, a ton, that reading is valued. And one of the things that I have noticed, and this is such a kind of an ironic statement because it takes away the importance of a teacher in a sense, but honestly, having a home where there is just tons and tons of reading and access to books makes readers. I mean, it's not all this intense instruction and all this stuff. It's just this exposure and a passion. I mean,
just making it the norm.
Making it the norm. But also, you know, for example, when I'm reading a book, if I see a line of writing that just blows my mind, I go show her. I go, oh my gosh, Anna, this line, I want to do this in my own writing. You know, I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed for kids is, as a teacher, I may teach them something specific about writing. That may hit them 5 years down the road. Like you, right. It just keeps seeping and seeping in. The other thing I've noticed, I come from a background of doing an approach to writing called Writing Workshop, which you hear Writing Workshop all the time now, and there are many different versions of it that I don't think are like the true original kind of done by Nancy Atwell and Donald Graves and all these other mentors of mine. But that, I'm very committed to that approach to writing, but I've also been in classrooms where the approach to writing was like very recipe-like and, you know, write this many sentences in this paragraph, blah, blah, blah. And I completely didn't agree with that approach to writing, but that teacher valued writing and gave those kids an opportunity to write every single day.
Yeah.
And the honest truth is, getting your bottom in a chair and doing it every day creates writers. And you can have bad teachers and still be a good writer. Mm-hmm. And I think just creating that environment and that opportunity, and I think there are better ways to create that opportunity. I have very specific ideas about that, but you know, it's, I think sometimes we make it so complicated and it doesn't have to be complicated. Although I would never say that writing is easy. You know?
No. And, you know, so it's funny because I look at some of the writing that B brings home from school. Now, I have to say, I always feel like, oh my God, I'm probably that parent that nobody wants to have because I have a background in education and I have so many years of classroom experience. And so I feel like I have a really high standard that I want to hold the teachers to. Yeah. But I'm also that mom that is like happy to come into the classroom and volunteer. So I think that sort of like balances it a little. But so B brings home this thing all the time and she'll have, and I get so frustrated with this. There'll be a question that she has space to answer. And so the writing is not story writing. It's not creative writing. It's technical writing.
Yeah.
But they want them to write using this RAISE formula, which, God, don't even ask me what RAISE stands for. It's like restate the question, answer the question. I don't know what the I and the S are like lumped together. So like something about your supporting evidence. And then the E is like expand.
Yeah.
And she always gets the E crossed out, but she's actually technically answered the question 100% correctly and she's not getting credit for it. And so I feel really, really torn because she knows she's not getting all the points for it, even though she answered correctly. And that's very frustrating to her.
Right.
And I think that strategy is, is keeping kids from wanting to keep writing because
absolutely
they're getting it wrong in quotes when they're not wrong. And
well,
yeah, go ahead. I mean, but
so I have lots of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Yes. Lay these thoughts on me.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you look at writers who really, really struggle with writing, who, you know, if you ask them what they focus on, what do you do to become a better writer? They will talk to you about, well, I don't capitalize the words right. I don't spell the words right. I don't blah, blah, blah.
That's not writing.
That's not writing.
No.
That's like the last stage that you do when your ideas are set, when you know, have your content set, when you've expressed those important ideas. And so the problem is, I think in a lot of ways, is that we have teachers who are not comfortable writing themselves. And the concrete thing that you can do if you're not comfortable with writing is you can give them these little formulas, and because they're not abstract. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, you know, your daughter may approach that in a different way that works for her style as a writer. And she will still probably be able to express her ideas completely. It's going to break out of that little recipe.
Right.
And, you know, interesting writing, you know the rules, you know the conventions, and then you break them.
Like, oh, you have it's to just show, like fine arts.
Yeah, you have to show your competence, and then you do your you know, the special sauce. But the other, you know, the thing is with writing workshop approaches, kids are treated like authentic writers and they find their own topics. You know, as teachers, we will provide the genre because you've got to be able to write across genres. But, and then the kid writes, and then you sit down with this child and you confer with them and you say, Is it B or Belle who has this piece you were talking about?
It's B.
Okay. So you might say, B, okay, you know, what is the main idea you're trying to get across here? Like, what are you trying to tell me? And she may talk that. And if that's missing, if it's, I can say, oh my gosh, you know, you just said something so important. Is that in your piece right now? She might go, oh, I'm like, oh, sweetie, write that down now.
Let's put it in.
Write that down. And you know, so there are just different ways to approach it. It doesn't have to be a recipe all the time. But one of the things I have just, as a parent, I have just had to let go of the stuff that, well, nothing comes home with writing, but the stuff that I know that is happening in the classroom, you know, she has to function in that classroom.
Yeah.
And so do what the teacher's doing. But the biggest advice, you know, there's two things of advice that I would give to parents helping their kids with writing at home and encouraging them is if you see any writing from your child, have them read it out loud to you, have them hear their writing out in a space. And then all I would do, and this is what I do in my classes, this is how I give response. I do something called say back. And this is Peter Elbow, who's a great, great writing mentor. All you do is repeat back in the words of the writer what stood out to you. Mm-hmm. And often what stands out to you is good writing. Mm-hmm. It also happens to be really good writing.
And that plants that in their head.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, B, did you see how you started that sentence with a verb? Oh my gosh, you could do that in other writing too. Maybe that's your thing. That's like one of your style things.
She did the funniest thing the other day where she said, this is my favorite sentence I've ever written.
Oh my gosh. And you don't want to get too teachery. The second we go from parent to teacher, it's like death.
Yeah.
But like celebrate that sentence and say, oh my gosh, what did you do? Oh my gosh, B, you could do that in your writing next time. Okay, bye. I'm going to go do the dishes now. Like don't
harp on it.
But or if you hear another piece that she does and reads to you, I'm like, oh my gosh, B, you did that thing again. Like, that's your voice. That's your thing. You know, and the truth is, when you're trying to game high school essays and whatever, you just need to throw in a few of these gem style writer's craft things. So if you've got an arsenal of like four or five of these things,
you got it made. Gold. Yeah.
I mean,
you got it.
You're
made.
Super gold.
I mean, I've read an awful lot of high school essays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you it wouldn't take much to make yours stand out. Right.
Yeah. You but know, I also think, you know, we can't as parents force this, and it's a waiting game. It's a faith game. You know, gosh, my daughter, I look at her and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're such a writer girl. But she doesn't want to identify as that. She's starting to identify as that. And she's doing it on her own terms, not because I forced her. And, you know, you just gotta parent the kid you have.
I'll be honest. If neither one of them grows up to be a writer, that's fine.
Yeah.
And if neither one of, like, if this is something that B is just dabbling in and just tries it out and it's not her thing, then that's totally fine. I mean, I'll be honest. I was 35 years old before I decided I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got plenty of time. Of course.
Well, I'm going to do another little shift on this because for me, I feel like, you know, I was in law school. I quit because I had a, you know, message from God. God said, you need to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was my mission for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing this Family of Writers class, and it was life-changing for me. It's the easiest thing I ever did as a teacher. It's the most powerful thing I've ever done as a teacher. And there's an energy behind it. And I think when something's easy and sustainable and it's changing lives, I gotta keep, like, that's the mission.
Yeah. Why but would you walk mission, away from that?
My mission is not to have create professional writers. That's the furthest thing. My mission is to have people keep writing in their lives for the rest of their lives. As a tool that helps them understand how to make sense of this world, how to celebrate, how to mourn, how to, like, just to use it as a tool. Because for me, it brings in story. It brings in, and that connects people. And that's a legacy people can share, like we must share. So for me, it's not like, oh, I want you all to be professional writers. I want you to be able to say, I'm a person who writes. And I'm not scared of it. I always tell them, so my husband is a rocket scientist. You're married to like a little scientist guy too, aren't you?
A medical physicist.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's so cool. Probably for our personalities, we need those guys.
We do. It's a balance thing.
Yeah. So, but when we were a long distance dating, this is like a total bird walk, but it's not, we were dating and, you know, I was really turned on by this brain that was so different from mine. Like the things he thinks about, first of all, he can't tell me half of them because he has security clearance. So I don't even know what he does really. But, I also noticed, okay, this guy can write. This guy is funny in his writing, you know, and if you have a person who just has an interesting brain and can also write, that's like a triple threat.
Don't you feel like writing is something that can just enhance almost any profession that you can think of? I mean, I felt that way because I taught fine arts for almost 10 years. And I had a kid that said to me once, does it upset you that a lot of kids don't leave your classes and go on to be art majors? Yeah. And I was like, no. Because if I've instilled a love of something that they can then go on and use to help them understand another subject that can help them as stress relief, that can help them as a way to get an idea across, as a way to just be creative, to solve a problem in a totally another area of their life, I'm like, then why would I be upset because they don't go on to major in art? Like that just had never even occurred to me.
Right. Right. Well, and the other thing, Abby, is, you know, I don't think they're different processes. The outcome is going to be different, but your artist students are in a composing process. They're reading the world to find ideas. They're drafting their pieces. They're redoing their pieces. They're then presenting them to a real audience, you know, when they have a gallery show. I mean, it's the same darn process.
Oh, it totally is.
And it's, so I think every human needs some way to read the world, whether, you know, it's art, it's running a marathon, you know, whatever.
It's just whatever the tool, I mean, the only thing that's different is the mechanism that we use to get those ideas across. Yeah. And so, you know, I started out, and you can feel free to laugh. Everyone at home, feel free to laugh. my original medium was fibers. That's not funny until I say to you, I was a weaving major, which something about that always brings the basket weaving joke to the front. But underwater basket weaving.
I didn't even think of that because I'm so, look, I have, some of my very best friends are artists. It shows you how open-minded I am.
You are so open-minded.
No, but my friend Suzanne and then my friend Susan, they're both quilters.
My middle name is Susan, so shut up.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
See? Okay. Connecting.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, I think they're both always so kind of surprised at how genuinely interested I am. They're fiber artists. I think that's what they call themselves.
Yeah, that's what I was, a fiber artist.
I go see their pieces. My mind is literally blown. And I'm just so interested because I feel like we're in the same process.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different outcome than mine, but they're telling stories with those pieces. So I just, no fiber jokes from me.
Yes. Thank God you get me. Well, see, and I went from fibers to, I went through, after I graduated, I sort of went through a printmaking phase because I had a friend who was a printmaker who did beautiful work and she taught me the tool.
Wait a minute. I just have to interrupt.
Yeah.
Because now fiber jokes are coming to me.
Oh, did
you go to fiber U or like where college offers a fiber major?
Everybody needs a little fiber in their diet, Lorraine. I mean, hello.
It's legal now.
That's right. Nice. Well, yeah, I went from fibers to I went to printmaking and then I went to photography. And you know, so part of my thing was I never wanted a medium that I felt like was machine made. And then I ended up in photography, which I then reconciled the fact that I fell in love with it by then doing historic process where I printed all of my pictures by hand, not in a dark room with like silver gelatin paper. Like I coated paper with like salt and silver. I did one of the original photographic processes from like the 1850s or whatever.
I love it.
And that's what I did because I just felt like I was creating this and there was a story behind it. And I loved the story behind the photograph. And so
then I do a writing prompt. Abby. I do a whole thing in Family of Writers called Story Beneath the Photo.
Oh my God, I love that.
Get out of town.
I love that. Well, then when I wanted to be a writer, I said to Sean, just like I taught myself to use a camera as a tool to tell my story, I just have to teach myself how to use words to tell my story now. And that's what I needed Jenny for.
But no, I think if you're really going to be true to yourself, I think you need to get a tablet and etch your words in stone.
Okay, shut up. Because if you say it to me and it's a challenge, guess what I'm sending you in the mail? A big stone tablet that I've carved.
Oh my gosh.
Here you go, Lori. So if we circle back around to getting your kids to write at home.
Yes.
So here's what I found. You know, of course, I was trying to think of like all the different ways that I could just subtly encourage the girls to want to write. Yeah. And I, you know, I thought, well, you know, we could all get new notebooks. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than like a brand new notebook and a new set of colored pens, or, you know, I was kind of thinking of the, I was thinking too small scale, but then I realized, because I volunteer in the girls' classroom, that Bea, who is in second grade, her classroom uses Chromebooks, and they use Google Classroom.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, oddly enough, my girls both have Chromebooks. They have Chromebooks that my mother gave them. They never really picked them up or used them for it, because they also both have iPads. Because, you know, we're just in the realm of technology now, where like every kid has a screen of some sort. But I pulled out her Chromebook and I made sure it was charged, and I just set it on the table. Like, I had mine. I like to write at the kitchen table, because, I don't know, it's like just my favorite room in the house. And so I just like to be here.
Yeah.
So mine was set up. All my stuff was there, all my million post-its and my, you know.
Yeah.
And I just set her book across the table. So anyway, she comes down the other morning. I have a Charlie horse in my leg. Sorry, I have a Charlie horse in my leg.
Nothing get up and walk it out.
Nothing ruins a story like a Charlie horse. I'm rubbing it out. It's okay. Oh. I'm okay now.
Okay.
No one panic.
Riding is dangerous work.
It is super dangerous.
Get injured sitting at your table.
Woo! Yeah, so she comes down the other morning, and the computer was just sitting right there. And the funny thing was, she opened it up. And I said to her, all I said was, hey, do you realize that you can open a Google Doc on your computer? And that's the same thing that I use to send Miss Jenny when mommy writes her story.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she said, really? Like, that's what you use?
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't say, no, I use Scrivener. And then Jenny makes me like cut and paste it all into a Google Doc and then reformat it. And then, you know, blah, blah, you know, and let that go. But I was like, no, yeah, that's totally what I use. And it made her feel, okay, first of all, it made her feel like it was real, which I have this thing where when I taught preschool, because I taught preschool for several years at Ohio State before I taught high school. And
before you went to Weaver's University?
Before, after Weaver's University, after Weaver's U, but before I taught high school, I taught preschool. And I had just this philosophy that if you give the kids real materials,
100%.
Then they are going to do something awesome with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a tea party with 35 3-year-olds where we used real china.
Yeah.
Nobody broke a piece. Nobody broke a single piece. They knew it was precious.
Yeah. Well, and that's really also the philosophy behind the writing workshop approach.
Mm-hmm.
You give them real pens, real materials.
Yeah.
You have devices out. You need to also read a woman named Katie Wood Ray and Michael Glover. They talk about a writing workshop approach for preschoolers, and it is so amazing. And it's not this approach that is like, we need to make you uber writers who can pass the AP when you're seven.
Yeah,
you know, AP English when you're seven. They're really getting at the heart of the composing process and treating people authentically. Every single person on this planet has a story to tell, has a writing idea to write about. Mm-hmm. And I also think if you start early on having the expectation that, no, Anna, I'm not going to give you ideas. I'm not going to tell you you need to write about how you felt when you woke up this morning, or you need to write about a little story about a bear who went to the store,
or the kid who walks into the backyard and all of a sudden sees a castle sitting there. Go.
Exactly.
You know,
like three people in the class that might be interesting to them.
Yeah.
And they're going to write well about that. And, you know, one of the biggest things for encouraging kids is making sure they have ownership over their process and over what they're going to write about. Now, of course, as teachers, you know, obviously they have to respond to in-class essays. But that's a different kind of writing.
Yeah.
And I feel like you have to have an identity as a writer and a confidence in your process. Not necessarily totally before that happens, but you need to come into that kind of writing also knowing there's school writing, there's real writing, you know, there's all these different genres. And, but I will, you know, I will, and the other thing, getting back to technology, kids need so much access to technology.
Yeah.
Because for example, my daughter has terrible penmanship. Uh-huh. And she would say, well, I can't write. I'm like, no, I just can't read this word right here. Yeah. But you're a writer.
Yeah.
You have ideas.
Those are two totally different issues.
But kids connect those issues.
Yeah.
And so what I did right away is I made sure she had keyboarding skills.
Yeah.
Like parents were sending their kids to all these classes. I'm like, no, you're going to learn how to do the keyboard, because that's going to open up your world, because she's also gifted. Mm-hmm. So her brain moves so much faster than her actual physical hands can.
Right.
But on a computer with a keyboard, she can fly.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So that's huge. But we also have to respect that there are some kids who are going to compose better in a notebook with a pencil.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
doesn't it access a different part of your brain too?
Well, absolutely. And for me, like my composing process, when I'm searching for ideas, when I'm not sure what the form of that idea is yet, when I'm not sure of that structure, I'm in a notebook. Mm-hmm. I have like, I get those giant post-its and I put them on a wall. Like, and you know, if I open my closet door right now, you will see them.
You know, using your whole body and your whole arm to move, to write and to draw. I mean, I taught drawing for a long time, you know, it does. It accesses a different area of your brain.
Yeah. And
some kids need that. Some kids, you know, maybe can sit down and start to type. Okay. So we said two things that I don't want to forget.
Yeah. And I had a great idea and I didn't write it down.
I know. I'm writing down on my tiny post-its right
here. I love it.
You know, the idea of all these different types of writing, and that's, I feel like I didn't say this before when we were talking about that raise strategy that they do in Bee's classroom, you know, and not getting the last part right, not getting full points because she didn't do the E, you know.
Right.
There's probably nothing wrong with that. And it's, you have to, like you said, you have to learn to play the game, one,
right.
Which, I mean, it took me until I was in college to really learn. Sure. That, I mean, I've got a great story about that.
Yeah.
That may or may not be a podcast story. Sometimes I just can't keep my mouth shut. I mean, it's just, that's my problem.
Those stories will be for your financial supporters of your podcast.
Right.
That's right. Top secret writing stories.
About how I really totally f***ed off Dr. Nicely at ETSU. But yeah, but the idea of you have school writing, and I'm really careful not to tell B what I think of that strategy.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's really important. And I want this stated right here, particularly if B's teacher ever listens. I want her to know. But I want her to know, I actually think that parents shouldn't contradict the teachers
100%
in front of the children. Yep. I think that we need to be on the same page. And, you know, they are teaching that strategy across second grade at Bee's school, and they're teaching it. Third grade expects them to know it. And I know where they're going with it. You know, I know ultimately what they're trying to do. Yep. So I have to be really, really careful not to say to her, like, oh, that last part is just dumb. Like, you know. What I try and do, though, is just emphasize the fact that, like, well, your answer itself was correct. You know, you read that paragraph. You were able to comprehend what it was they were looking for. the last piece is you just have to remember to do all the steps, right, you know, for the answer. Right. And that to me, that's school writing. I mean, that's, yeah. And that's probably the precursor to technical writing, which is the precursor to succeeding in a lot of the sciences. Yeah. You know, so there's that. But also the technology part. When she opened up that Google Doc and she started to type, you want to know what blew her mind? And this is so funny, but she's not a terrible speller, but she's not a strong speller. No. I was never a very good speller as a child. And she's always done a lot of that. Hey, mom, how do you spell this? Hey, mom, how do you spell that? And I won't lie. I'm lazy. I should go over the phonics. I don't. I just freaking spell the words for her because, like, to me, it's more important that she's just getting it down on paper than, you know, processing through how to spell it. She did learn, and I always have to whisper this because we have her right over here.
Yeah.
She learned she can ask Alexa how to spell things.
Yeah.
Which was like a total game changer for me. We call her She Who Must Not Be Named because if you say her name, it sets her off.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that South Park where they used her name a whole bunch of times and they were setting people's Alexas off in their houses while they were watching South Park, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, that is really funny.
We're probably, I feel like I want to lean in close and just say, Alexa, really loud and see if it sets anybody's off.
Well, we don't have one. I mean, so but we're safe here.
She, you know, she realized that she could ask her how to spell things and she would spell for her. Well, then, so B sits down and she does the Google Doc and she types chapter one. This kid was flying. She had a story in her head. She had been thinking about it. I mean, which was what I had just loved to see her sit down. And then it just all started to come through. And she got chapter one done and she looked back. She said, Mom, what are all these red squiggles underneath my words? And I said, well, those were words that you didn't spell correctly. And she looked at me with this like fear in her eyes, like, oh my God, I have to go back and make all these corrections. And I was like, listen, kid, let me show you something. So we right clicked it and it brought up the menu. And I said, do you see right here? It says, did you mean? And then it gives you a word. And she goes, oh, and I said, is that the word you meant to write? Yes. And it was like, mind pieces were blown all over the room. And suddenly it took away one of the inhibitions that she had towards writing.
Yeah.
And I love
Okay.
That.
So I have lots of thoughts on this.
Oh, lay them on me.
Okay. So you're getting at something that is so important. And before I start talking about this, don't delete this part out of when you edit the podcast.
Okay.
I want to be sure that when I start going on this discussion of my thoughts, that everyone knows I care about spelling and I care about punctuation and I care about grammar and correctness. It is critical, but there's a time and a place for it. Mm-hmm. And the fastest way to shut down a writer is before you talk to them about their golden lines and what stood out to you. And before they have set their content and their ideas, the fastest way to shut them down is say, oh, you know, honey, you didn't spell this word right. Like, hey, let me show you how to spell this word. Or, oh, you need a period right here. Because kids then believe that writing is about that correctness.
Yeah. Is it weird to dedicate today's Mom Writes shout out to Lori Tom? I can't wait for Elon Musk to invent some sort of time machine that can shoot me to the West Coast so that I can have brunch with Lori and still get back in time to do school pickup. Although, when that becomes a reality, I'm having brunch with Mel like every day. So anyway, there was more to our conversation that didn't make the episode. So if you loved this, then let me know. I can put out a short episode with the rest of our conversation as like a bonus Mom Writes episode. But thank you, Lori, for just being genuinely awesome. You guys can find Lori on Instagram at Lori Stories and on her website at www.lorrie.com.
mmt.com. Join us again next week on Mom Writes for more awesome book coaching with Jenny and Mel.